This podcast is produced by Unedited.
The Songwriters Podcast is in association with the Ivers Academy and PRS for Music M Magazine. My name's Louise Golby. I'm an independent artist and I've been writing and performing my own music for quite a while now. As a songwriter myself, I'm very interested in the art of songwriting, how song ideas come about, what triggers certain lyrics, or how a melody or musical idea is started. In this series, I've interviewed some of the UK's leading songwriters and artists, discussing their songwriting techniques and stories behind their biggest songs and collaborations. My guests have written tracks for the likes of Stevie Wonder, Adele, Tina Turner, Kylie Minogue and Cher, as well as receiving MBEs, Grammys, Ivor Novello's, Brit Awards and number one singles for their work. My guest for this episode is a Grammy-nominated songwriter, recording artist and vocalist with multiple global credits to her name. She has penned songs for artists such as Rita Ora, Bugsy Malone, Example, Leona Lewis, Eliza Doolittle, Miss Banks, Steps and Alicia Keys, to name a few. She's written music for TV and film, including co-writing and performing on the soundtrack for Four Kids and It, starring Michael Caine and Russell Brand. As well as featuring as lead vocalist on several huge songs with various producers over the years, as an artist in her own right, she has gained 1 million monthly Spotify listeners, toured the world, and has released several EPs. Her latest release, Nobody, is out now. I am delighted to be talking to the brilliant Laura White about her career so far, delving into her songwriting processes, artists she's worked with, and the stories behind her biggest songs. I started with the question I've been asking all of my guests. If I was to introduce you with just one song, what would it be? Love at first sight, but it was blocked by pain. So for you, I'll exceed the top won't five in the game. Baby, in the city lights, I swear I hear you call my name. Call my name. There's nothing right. I'm stuck in where your mind's away. I was under Rita Ora's management for a while. So, you know, they had Ellie Goulding at the time, Rita, Iggy Azalea, Conor Maynard, and I was there as an artist and as a songwriter. And one of my demos was played in the office, one of my songs called To Be Loved, which was off one of my early EPs that I'd made with who is now Jonas Blue, actually. And they played the song To Be Loved and the Invisible Men were walking past and heard the record and just said, what's this song? Like, we love this girl's voice. Then asked me to go in and to possibly write something for Rita. And obviously I loved the Invisible Men. I'd always wanted to work with them. I sort of had this idea the night before to just sort of write a song about New York rain. And I actually randomly saw Rita was in New York and it was raining and I got this full love story in my head. So I wrote down the title. And then that was the day I just went to the studio and I remember there was just a click track playing and literally no chords, anything. And within about 10, 15 minutes, I had the full song in my head, just literally threw it all down on the mic.
Wow.
And when we listened back, we were just like, it was just me and Jason at the time. And we were just like, this just feels great. It was so natural. We loved it. And then it was literally like a year and a half, 2 years later, didn't think anything of it. And then in the end, they just shortened it down, took the chorus, and it became the single. New York Raining is a song from American rapper Charles Hamilton featuring British singer Rita Ora. The song was released on March the 18th, 2015, and the track appears on the deluxe edition of the season one soundtrack for Fox's TV series Empire, which was nominated for Best Compilation Album at the Grammys in 2016.
It's a song I'm so proud of, though, because I think it really, like, you can hear the soul. And obviously my background was so in soul music. And that's why, to me, it blended, like, the pop elements with soul music so well. And it just, the production became amazing. It entered, you know, the Empire soundtrack. And then from there, it got Grammy nominated, and we were just like, wow, like this song just took a little life of its own and really propelled my songwriting career. So I was so proud of it.
It's amazing. These are the moments that make you think it's all worth it, isn't it? And you just never know when you write that song what its journey is going to be.
So much so, yeah, yeah.
And did you meet Rita after it had been recorded by her?
Oh, do you know, it was a funny thing because, I mean, you never know. And, you know, when you write songs for artists, sometimes it's, you know, a lot of the time I'll really write the songs and I never really know sometimes if it's for me, if it's for other people. That was a specific song really aimed for Rita, and I sort of just did the song, left it, and then it was funny when she cut it, you know, 2 years later or whatever, she was actually on The Voice at the time and asked me to go and watch, but I was away, I couldn't go and watch it, so I was like, no, so I never got to meet her. But I always say, like, it helped my career so much, so I was so thankful that she took that song and it had such a big life, you know. It was more just the story in my head that I'd envisioned, and then when I sang it, it just felt so natural that I just knew it was a joy, you know, for any artist, any singer to sing it. It just felt right. And I think when, you know, every song I write, as long as I get that feeling, like, this just feels good when I write it, it feels good when I sing it, that's when I know it's okay, this song is done and it's ready, you know? So it just felt good straight away.
Let's actually take it back to the beginning of your songwriting journey.
Yes.
Can you tell us about your journey as a musician and a songwriter? Tell us how it all started.
So I loved music from a really young age, you know. I actually wasn't from a musical family. So obviously, you know, I was born and raised in a little town just outside of Manchester. Still got my accent. I just loved music from a really young age. I remember hearing Sinead O'Connor, and I heard Mariah Carey, One Sweet Day, and I'd go to school and I'd be like singing these melodies all day, and I never knew why. Like, as a child, I was just like obsessed with music, I knew then. And then I remember I was about 8 years old and I saw someone play the piano, and I knew with the piano, I thought, this is my instrument. I just knew instantly. So I started classical piano lessons when I was eight. And then I think I got to I got to grade seven on classical. And then when I was 15, I found Alicia Keys and Songs of A Minor just moved me so much. And I knew what I wanted to do. And that's when I started to gig. And for six years, actually, I was gigging the pubs in Manchester, working men's clubs, the jazz bars, did all this. When I was about 18, 19, I started to start writing my own songs on my piano. And then when I was 19, I was spotted for a soul band, which was Mark Ronson producing.
Wow.
So that was the first break I got. And then I moved to London, lived in a hostel at first with absolutely no money. And that was like the first break that I got. But it was after, I gigged and sang and wrote songs for 6 years before I got my first break and started writing songs. So it was a long journey, even just to that point, you know.
And tell us a little bit more about Mark Ronson's involvement then.
So I'd been on another TV show. It was a show on E4 that was 10,000 people auditioned for, and they wanted six singers for this show. It was called the E4 School of Performing Arts. And they had me, it was Bluey Robinson as well, who's an artist now, and Bob Bruce, who was on The Voice. So we were the six that were picked. And then we moved to London. Then I started to really start writing songs. All my songs at first had like two chords. You know, it was all really early writing. And then from there, then I just knew I loved to write as much as I loved to sing. So I put all my songs onto MySpace and very quickly became, I think I was like the fifth most viewed independent artist at the time on MySpace.
Incredible.
So they found me through that, and it was ATC management that then put me in this like a three-piece soul band, and Ronson was producing all the records, but he was out in New York. So when I was brought in, I didn't actually get to work with him one-on-one, But still, it was, you know, the involvement and the soul band was so amazing, and it was the, it was what got me to London and really first plugged me in, because before that I'd never met anybody in London. I didn't know anyone in music. So it was just an amazing first experience, you know. I was very homesick as well, but it was just, that was my first experience in the music industry, I guess.
We obviously will mention X Factor, if that's okay, because that is part of your journey as well as an artist and a vocalist. So you came eighth on X Factor in 2008, mentored by Cheryl.
Yeah.
Cheryl with no surname. looking back on that experience, how does it make you feel? You also featured on a number one song with the X Factor contestants, didn't you?
Yes.
Version of Hero. Was it a whirlwind of a time?
Oh, so much. I mean, and you know, that's what I mean. I was gigging, like I said, for years and years. I was a real jazz girl, writing songs for years. And then I'd gone from this Ronson band, gone from this. And then, you know, I heard about the show, and it was actually my dad at the time that said, "You've gigged now 6 years, you know, and I just think you need to get your voice heard." And we were like in this tiny town in Atherton where people just didn't get heard, you know, it was like this. So I went for the show, and it was immediately overnight. I mean, I was always the favourite to win, Louise. So I was like, like the pressure was, wow. You know, it was so big. And when I was on it was 20 million every week that were watching. So I was immediately in the finals on the live shows, and it was amazing in the sense it immediately got me out there and it immediately got me heard. I loved my journey on the show, like musically, all the songs I picked were my own. Cheryl was really like, "Laura, just do her own thing." I think she knew I was a bit of a live wire, did my own thing musically. So it was good in that sense, but I think because I was, you know, a real girl that had been a musician and writing songs for years and playing, I immediately learned, okay, this is a lot of TV and, you know, and I was quite a shy girl as well deep down. So I was a bit like, oh, this is very overwhelming, you know. And your life, it's a funny thing, but your life is never the same after it. So I always think like I was this girl before it, and then after it, it's a different life. So
yeah,
it was just a life-changing experience. But, you know, I'm thankful for all my journey. It's every step has made me stronger and been the making of me.
I also understand when you were on the show, there was a bit of controversy surrounding when you got voted off, and it even got mentioned in Houses of Parliament because of the Ofcom complaints.
Yes.
How was it being in the middle of that?
Oh my gosh. So, I mean, it was the only time on the show that it was ever raised in Parliament. And I always say, you know, I'm so thankful to the public, because there was just hundreds of thousands of people petitioning, and still to this day there's so much controversy about it. And Laura, what happened? What's the reason? And I think for me it was a funny thing, but when I was on the show, Louise, I'm very much like, I was like, I really want to write all my songs, and I was the girl on the pianos, and so I really kind of knew that I wasn't maybe gonna win a show like that. I just wanted to just be thankful I was on the show and try and get signed, try and get my music heard through that and look at it that way. And, you know, and it really got me out there, as I say, it got me a fan base. You know, now if I play my own shows, I've played, you know, I'm probably like 600-700 capacity venues. And that for me is incredible. And I can build my artistry independently and have my freedom creatively. So I'm thankful that was another step on my journey, you know.
And you've ended up actually writing for artists that have come off X Factor and other shows.
Crazy.
So do you think that was a lot to do with the fact that you'd already come from that angle? Is that just
not
coincidence?
At all. Yeah, not at all. I mean, to be honest, Louise, the tough thing was like after the show, my journey really became, so I came off the show and I was probably playing 4 shows a day. Can you believe that? For like 3 years. I never said, I made it really clear in my journey as an artist, like, I'm never going to be like, I'm off X Factor. You know, I wasn't that, because I was a musician for years before it. So I really started to put on all my own shows with orchestras, all my own songs, writing all my own songs. And then I started to write all my own EPs. So I then made 3 EPs of my own, which were all top 5. Thank God, again, unbelievable. Just independently dropped these EPs, made them with amazing people like Ian Barter, Jonas Blue, real soul music. And I put these EPs out, and then the more I was writing these songs, I just started to naturally also get cuts. So I had, you know, a number one in China first was the first one, and Germany, Spain, all these different records. And it was a real, just a natural journey. So I think, I mean, recently, like writing for instance, one of the Little Mix girls was, it's a real, just a 360. And I think the bit I'm proudest of was, I was just, it was very much an independent journey. You know, I was unpublished and unsigned for I think 7 years before I had a cut. I did it just out of literally me writing a song every day for like 6-7 years. So now when I see the cuts and the success, it means so much to me, because I think, wow, like I built all that with no team, no man. Now I'm so lucky. I've got a big publishing team who are behind me, and an amazing manager, and a lot of help now. But I think back then it was literally just like real DIY, me just wicking and building for years. So it means even more to me, you know, because of that.
As a songwriter, you've written songs for Bugsy Malone.
Yes.
You've done some writing for Leona Lewis, Eliza Doolittle, Naughty Boy.
You've also written a song for Steps called One Touch. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
So it was Chris Warley, who's a producer, actually. I can't remember where he lives. I think he might be in Sweden, Chris. But I'd never met Chris. I've never yet met him in person. And we were under the same publishers at the time. We were with Pia at the time. And he got in touch. He'd heard some of my music. I'd then heard some of his music when it was sent to me. And he said Steps were making this new album and wanted some more songs. So he sent me, he had an instrumental track ready that really was in the vein of the new album.
One Touch is a song recorded by British pop group Steps for their 6th studio album, What the Future Holds, released on the 27th of November 2020.
And I literally just played this track one day and I was instantly inspired. I think I was on a day out. I was in the middle of Richmond, where I now live, with such a northern accent. And I was just sat in Richmond Park and I just literally got it. I write all my songs in a paper diary. Still to this day, I've got thousands of diaries. I'll never go to computer. And I just wrote the entire song there and then in Richmond Park. And then I just took it to my engineer, recorded it all, and literally 6 months later, it was number one on the album. So I was like, yes! Like, and I still, to this day, like when I hear it, I think, Richmond Park! Because it feels like summery, and I think I wrote it about, I was actually going out with an Italian guy at the time, so I wrote it all about this love story in my head that was about this guy, and I mean, he turned out to be a nightmare, but... Still, the love song was better than the relationship.
Will he ever find out the song is about him?
I think he does. I think sometimes you can hear the songs and they always think, this one's about me.
So you write the lyrics and everything on paper.
Yes, every time.
Do you just record voice notes on your phone when you're suddenly coming up with ideas? And
So that particular one, I mean, it's literally just, you know, working it all in my head, and then I just record everything on voice notes until I can get to my studio, the entire lyric, always on paper, working it all out. But that, I mean, that song, I just wrote the entire thing. So it was just literally, but, you know, again, it was a really quick song, that one, probably 15 minutes or something, and I just heard the entire song. It must have been a lucky day, you know. It was a crazy one, that one. But a lot of the time, most of my songs at the minute, I've got like an upright piano in my house. A lot of my songs now, it's just me and my piano, and I, you know, record it all there and then in my house, and then I'll go into a studio and get it. Okay, then we really get into it and get it built. And is this gonna? Sometimes I'll change them into dance songs or R&B songs, whatever I envision them as. Mm. It's always me and my piano to start it.
You were also involved in the huge Galantis hit called "Love on Me." Do you remember how that all came about?
I was really new to the dance world, you know. Like I said, my roots was in soul music, jazz music. I love a pop song, but the dance world was really new to me. And I was actually, I was in between, I was back in Manchester at the time, and I started to work with a writing team called The Six. So me and The Six got together, and they'd got this idea of Love On Me. I went in, we wrote the entire song, and it was really like, it was very much a bit of a, like a Caribbean holiday feel at the time. Again, it was a full song. And then in the end, it just got cut down. They just took certain bits of the song and then they just used that. And they said, oh, Galantis are going to take it. And I remember it. I was like, oh, I didn't actually know who Galantis were at the time. And then literally within 3 months, it was, I think it was number 15, this one or whatever in the charts. It was worldwide, absolutely everywhere.
Love On Me is a top 20 song by Swedish electronic music duo Galantis and Australian DJ Hook and Sling, released in September 2016.
In November just gone, I've actually just, me and Galantis have just got together again and we've just cut another 9 records together. We wrote so many incredible records together for the new project. But Love On Me again, just, it was it just took on a life of its own, Louise. It was like, wow, it was a monster of a song. We couldn't believe it. For years, when I was in Manchester, it's really amazing for bands and for, you know, rock music, obviously 1975 from that, you know, we've had some great talent, but the soul and the songwriting, it was a scene that I could never find other creatives to work with. I personally struggled a bit when I was in Manchester to meet others. So when I met The Six, I met them and I worked a lot with Bipolar Sunshine and then obviously Bugsy I met as well. But these were the only Manx that I was like, yes. So I'm so happy when I meet another Northerner in music and I go, you understand, you know, we've the same journey and it's amazing.
Actually, tell us about Bugsy. You've written and featured on tracks with him. Tell us about some of the stuff you've done with
So again, I mean, the Bugsy story was really just a natural journey. I started working with Naughty Boy and his lads, Wes and Shaq. At the time, we were always in Ealing Film Studios. The first records that we did was a record that I cut myself, me and Miss Banks, which was a record called Heartbreaker. It was like I wrote the entire song over an old Notorious B.I.G. beat, which I love. And I was like, yes, this is the vibe. And then it was that night, actually, Naughty Boy, Shah, said to me, do you think you could do Bugsy Malone? And I was like, oh, he's a man, he's from my city, I love his music. And I'd naturally grown up with a lot of rap music, but I think the grime scene for me was like, it was just another world, you know? But I was like, yeah, I can do grime. And I literally went home that night, studied all Bugsy's stuff. I was like, what am I doing? The next day I went in and Wes had this amazing saxophone track that was already built, this instrumental. And again, really quickly, all the song in my head just went straight into the booth and wrote this chorus immediately. Bo- Bugsy was in the room with me, and Bugsy was just like, that's it, that's the record. And then he just rapped all around my hook. And then again, 6 months later, I think the album was number two all over the UK. And it was, honest to God, Louise, that project was so amazing for me because I was an independent artist at the time, and the album was Rag and Bone Man, JP Cooper, Maverick Sabre, and then he kept me on the album, and I was like, wow, I was the only independent on the album.
Excellent.
So I felt so proud, like the journey was, it was wonderful to be part of that project.
Would you say your songwriting process and technique changes depending on who you're working with and who the song is for?
Do you know what? I focus on the song, and I don't really often think about who's going to cut this, what's it going to be. I'm really just truly about the creativity and the music and the writing. Me and my piano, I just sit and just think of the best songs that I can. And I found a lot of my music is me just cutting the record. And I feel like if this is going to be a song for my artistry, then I keep it. If it's not for me, then I'll give it to another artist. Or, you know, I've just recently written for one of the Little Mix girls.
Yes. Leanne, is it?
So that one's for Leanne.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. So this particular one, I mean, that one we didn't know at the time who that one was going to be for. Again, it was just a great song. I just went in with this concept. You know, so much of the chorus was there already. And we just went in, made the best record we could. And I think as long as a demo and the musicality is there, then it will just find the right home if it's not something for my project, you know. As long as the song is good, then I think that's the bones of a great record.
And do you ever, when you have written a good song, do you think, oh, I actually want to keep this for myself?
I've got a couple of songs, a song called To Be Loved, a song called That Girl, and my last single that I put out, Nobody. And I was just like, I can never give these away. They were just like,
what if Beyonce was like, Laura, can I have this song? I'm sure you'd say
yes. I mean, and I love Beyonce. I do love Beyonce. But it's a really weird thing. I genuinely, even though I've so many heroes like Beyonce, like Adele, like, you know, but it's a funny thing with a song. I think you really get a feeling. You know, I remember when I wrote, you know, like the New York Raining one, I loved it, but I knew straight away this isn't a Laura record. And I think,
yeah,
I think you just get that feeling. And I don't mess with it. When it feels like a Laura song, I'm like, nope. You know, and I just like keep it on my hard drive. I don't let Paul, my manager, have it.
Don't let him hear it just in case.
Yeah, just that's it. It's done.
I take it when you are giving the demos to the artist managements or labels or publishers.
Yeah.
It's yourself that's singing the demo vocal,
yes,
is it? Even
yes,
on
yes.
tracks for male artists or?
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, have I ever done, do you know what? I've not done a lot for me. It's mostly female artists that I've got the cuts with. Obviously Bugsy's, but he's like,
but you were singing on it. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's always me singing the demos. And I think just because I love it that way, you know, and I can really, I'm genuinely so passionate about music and my own writing. And so I love to just sing it all, feel everything. And that for me has just been what's really worked best.
Yeah.
You know, I've done quite a few sessions, me and the artist in a room, but I do like to just kind of maybe in a little studio locked away, write the best songs, and then just, if they're not for me, they find their own place.
So it's not just British artists you've worked with. We mentioned earlier about you having number ones across the world. So you had a number one record, Falling, for a Malaysian recording artist called Jin Lee in 2012.
Yes.
You've worked with Australian DJ producer Timmy Trumpet.
Yeah.
And also the Dutch X Factor winner, Lisa Lewis.
Lisa was one of my first cuts I had as a writer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's it like writing for different audiences in different countries? Does it feel like a different approach working with various labels and managers in a different kind of realm?
Yeah, again these things have just happened really naturally. The songs have just found their own way. The DJs are great to write for because the songs just go so global. You'll reach, you know, such an audience of different countries. Lisa was a wonderful artist to write for because I knew she could really sing, so it was wonderful to do that. The China one was actually really, it was strange for me because at the time it was, I mean, I was just recently sent to a K-pop camp and it was so funny, Louise, because I'd never written K-pop in my life and I turn up in the middle of Norway and they were like, welcome to the K-pop camp. And I was like, what am I doing here? But it was so funny because I really enjoyed it. We got amazing songs. So the Chinese record that went number one, that was a really peculiar song because when we wrote it, it was just this beautiful love ballad. And then when we heard it back, obviously, then I realised they have translators and half of the song was in Cantonese.
Wow, right.
Yeah. So I think they only actually kept the lyric falling in English. And I heard it back and I was like, this is crazy. Like, the entire song is... it's a completely different song, but Thankfully I don't have to write in Cantonese when I do it.
Imagine if you were given that brief.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
So for people listening who might not know what a K-pop camp is, Tell us what songwriting camps are and what they involve.
So my new publishers are Ultra Records, I've actually signed with, because I was writing a lot of dance music, which was wonderful for DJs and, you know, all this different music for this side of things since Galantis, to be honest. It all happened since that. And the K-pop world was, that's very much like, K-pop is like R&B, but, you know, it's all the music of Korea. So it's an absolutely massive world. We had a lot of the BTS guys at our K-pop camp. And my publishers, Ultra, they actually do a lot of camps. And camps were really new for me as well. I mean, I'm really, like I said, old school writer. When I'm at home, I just play Frank Sinatra and Bacharach. God bless Bacharach, who just passed away. I mean, that was like the saddest day of this year. Like, he was my hero, you know, and I just love, like, me and a piano. So when I signed with my publishers, they were amazing in the sense they suddenly sent me on all these really amazing camps. I worked with so many big writers and amazing people. And it was great in the sense you get amazing sessions. You just all get thrown in. You never know who you're going to go in with. You never know where you're going to create. But a camp is a strange thing where you'll also have to be in another country for 5 days. And I always feel like you're all a bit back at high school together. And as a singer, I always think as a singer, it's more tough because everybody else, like at night, you'll create all day. And then at night, everyone can have like lots of wine and have a great time. Whereas singers, I can only have a drink on the last day. Because we always have to watch our voices, don't we, Louise? So it's like, oh, we've got to be like sensible all week and it's not as fun. But camps are good for that. But I do find camps can be, me personally, I find that you are so tired when you come home because you've sang all week, your brain's tired, you're like, oh, it's exhausting, right? You know?
Would you say your approach to songwriting has changed since the beginning of your career? Can you see a development in your songwriting skills?
Definitely. You know what? And I always think when you feel like, I've got it, I've got this, I know I can just, these songs are just here and I know where to do. But genuinely, every year you get better. You know, I really think the more practice makes perfect, right? I mean, I read, I'm really big on business as well and inspiration. I love to follow, like, a lot of sports people. I mean, my celebrity crush is Ronnie O'Sullivan. If you're listening, Ronnie. And I love them because they've lived a life of, like, really being disciplined and putting their life into the craft, you know. And songwriting is exactly the same. Singing's the same, you know. When I started as a singer, I used to have this PA machine in my mum and dad's conservatory. And I'd just practice every night. Every night I'd be doing Aretha Franklin. And at first my little voice couldn't do them. And then suddenly my voice would grow. And songwriting is the same. But again, I still think the bones of my song, like the initial, when I first hear chords on a piano and I just sing, the chorus is always first to me. I honestly think that's the chorus. Like, this is it, you know. I really trust, like, the intuitive side of me. Whatever comes out first, and if I feel it, I don't mess with it. I keep that and then just keep honing the lyric and that's how I run it.
So I'd obviously love to talk to you about the fact that you've written for Alicia Keys. Can you tell us about that track and how that all came about?
Yeah, I know. So Alicia Keys, I mean, that was actually me and the Six again. We wrote for Alicia. That one didn't make the cut. Why? But again, you know, some you win, some you lose. But again, we loved the song. It still might be a Laura song. I mean, it was one, Alicia is, you know, Alicia's one of these where if I could have a cut with anybody, it'd be Alicia, you know. She's like my dream duet. As a singer, I always tell other singers this. I think the most difficult thing as a young artist is sometimes to go, when people go, what are you? You know, what are you as an artist? And it was a funny thing where I knew I had this voice, but if I couldn't see myself at first in what was on my TV screen, right? So if I'd see, like, my era was Britney or Christina, and I was like, I'm definitely not one of these people. And then when Alicia Keys came with the piano and the braids, and I was like, oh, Alicia Keys. And I remember hearing Falling for the first time, and it just hit me, like, straight to the core, like, oh, my God, whatever this is what needs to be in my life, I knew. So it was so joyous to have Falling as my week one on the show.
Yeah.
Because it was like the making of me finding music in a way, you know?
Is it true that Andre 3000 has written a song for you?
It is true. I know, he's crazy. Tell us about that. So, I mean, Andre, again, he's one of my heroes. And this was, for a little while, I mean, I was working with quite a lot of American writers. This particular American writer was writing with Andre quite a bit. So they created this song for me that was sent to me. I mean, it was a funny thing where it was like, I got this demo and I was like, is this for real? Like, this Andre 3000 has penned this song and sent it to me. It was crazy.
Was he singing on the demo?
It was the songwriter. It was a female vocal that was put on the track for my own project. But it was, I mean, again, it was one of them where it was amazing, but it just wasn't for me. Where I was like, no, I mean, I was like, should I just cut it anyway? Because you just can't even believe these things. My heroes are people like, you know, Andre's just obviously done so much unbelievable music. You just think, how can these people even find your stuff and you know, these things. I remember I did a version of Happy years ago, the Pharrell song online, and Pharrell made it his favourite cover. And I was like, oh, Pharrell, like, even it. I mean, I've never worked with him, but you think, God.
Manifest it.
Yeah, like, it's anything can happen, like, just with, you know.
But just the fact that they know who you are, Andre 3000 knew who you were, wanted to write this song, it's incredible.
I know, unbelievable.
Lyrics-wise, have you ever been influenced by what's around you politically or socially when it comes to writing songs?
Do you know what? I mean, I always tell everybody this. I'm not a massively political person, only in the sense of, you know, I love people. I could make 15 friends on the tube every day. I'm one of these, like, I love people's stories. You know, where we come from up north as well, we have everybody, we chat with everybody everywhere we go. So I just think politics in everywhere, it just divides so many. I definitely write about, you know, the right and wrong things of the world. But a lot of my songs, they always just go back to love, you know, love between people, friends, loving yourself. I really write most about what I know and what I go through. And that's because I think if I can truly tell my story, then you can hear the realness of a record, you know?
Yeah, rather than trying to create a narrative of something you don't know or you haven't experienced.
Yeah, something that's too, you know, I just want it to be just feels good music. Instead of, you know, some people do amazing message music, but I think my thing is more just melodies, love songs, moving the heart. I think that's my thing, you know?
Excellent. What song are you most proud of as a songwriter? So it basically doesn't have to be your most successful one, but the one that personally for you think's your best work.
Do you know, I mean, I love my song Nobody, because I think I hear Nobody and I think it couldn't be any great. You know, I'm proud of it. It's perfect. I don't want to change anything with it. Here we go, perfectionist behaviour. But I actually recorded the vocal to Nobody at 9 in the morning. and we just, it was like a scratch vocal, and I hear it back and I go, oh, it could have been mixed a little bit better, you know, vocally. But lyrically and melody wise I love it so much. I loved it. I wanted to write a song like the Eagles, and it feels like the Eagles when I hear it, so it's perfect to me. So I'd say I'm so proud of that one. And then I'd probably say my song New York Raining, because I think New York Raining just, it still kept its soul. And it was, I think it was the first time where I could, after dreaming for so long about having a song that could, that could move the world, God, when I just saw it, it went on this big soundtrack and it's Grammy nominated. I just was like, wow, like if you believe in something, it can happen. And it told me that things were possible. So that's the one that I'm always like, oh, probably that one as well.
Great answer. Final question. What is the song you wish you'd written, and what is it about that song?
So the song that I wish that I had written would have to be Alicia Keys, If I Ain't Got You. I don't want nothing at all if it ain't you, baby. If I ain't got you, baby. Some people want diamond rings, some just want everything, but everything means nothing if I ain't got you. Yeah. Some people search for. For me, it's just like the greatest melody ever. You know, I envision in my head she probably wrote it in 10 minutes, because it feels like, it just feels so natural, that song, like it wrote itself. It's simple. I remember the first night she played it in the UK, I think it was on like Jonathan Ross or something like that. And the next day she was releasing the album. And I remember, I think I was about 17, and I queued up at Tesco in Atherton outside to buy this album, me there at 9 a.m, because I was like, whatever that record was, it's perfect. My brain was like so happy with it. And for me, like, I'm really old school as well about love, you know. I'm really old fashioned when it comes to love. I think nowadays, like, we are in a bit of a world of social media. Everything's what people have and material things. And I'm really not a girl who's like that. I'm really like about real values, and are you with this person because you just love them? And that song is saying that. So it just so speaks to me as a message as well. And that's why I love Alicia as an artist, because she's real and that's what she's about.
To find out more about Laura, please follow her on Instagram at @officiallaurawhite. And to hear some of Laura's work, please listen to our specially curated playlist. The link is in the episode notes. Since recording this episode, Laura's track Nobody has been chosen as one of the winner songs for The Voice Australia. And she's written one of the tracks on Beverly Knight's brand new album The Fifth Chapter, out in September. To find out more about me, please visit my website, which is louisegolby.com. For updates about the Songwriters Podcast, please follow and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'd also like to give a special thanks to Paul Kennedy and Ultra Publishing for allowing us to record this episode in their wonderful office. This series of the Songwriters Podcast is produced by Christopher Mitchell for Unedited. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you've enjoyed this episode.